It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I could take you to the exact spot in my parents' living room in Gresham, Oregon, where I knelt down and I prayed this prayer. God, let me write a book that will change the world. Be careful what you pray for. I was 20 years old. I was young. I was religiously zealous. I was certain. And I was restlessly ambitious. Youth, zeal, certainty, ambition, not unlike the ingredients of the Molotov cocktail. They have the tendency to set the world on fire. And in my little corner of the world, that's exactly what happened because, incredibly, my prayer was answered. I did write a book. It was published, and it exploded. It started to sell and sell and sell. The publisher kept writing me saying, we're going back to print. It was selling tens of thousands of copies every month. I remember the day that I went into my local Christian bookstore and there was my book, the number one best-selling book in the country. And it stayed there for months. I was on national radio shows. Newspaper articles were being written about me and my book. The pinnacle of my 15 minutes of fame was when I was on the Bill Maher television show sitting across from a young actor named Ben Affleck. I had a conversation with Batman. My book went on to sell over 1.2 million copies and was translated into dozens of languages. Now, if you were not a part of the evangelical Christian subculture in the late 1990s, you will not have heard anything about my book. But if you were growing up in that environment, there's a sense in which my book did change your world. Now, some people would say for the better, but there are a lot of people who would say for the worse.
All right, that's the voice of Pastor Josh Harris, who grew up to be the pastor of the founding church of Sovereign Grace Ministries in Gaithersburg, Maryland. He also, of course, wrote the famous book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye, which came out in 1997. Josh went to be a student at Regent College in Vancouver, British Columbia. But here's the story. Just this week, Josh Harris has announced that he's leaving his wife of 20-plus years. He is renouncing his faith in Christ. He's apologizing to the LGBT community and others. And it's kind of been a shock to those that have followed Josh for a number of years and been impacted by the things he's written and said. And so I thought it would be very interesting for all of us, even if you may not be familiar with Josh, and some of you may be very familiar with him, if I invited two young men who grew up during that time, was familiar with his work, and actually one of them wrote a great article in PJ Media called Josh Harris Kisses Christianity Goodbye. His name is Tyler O'Neill. Tyler joins us this morning. Let me just tell you, Tyler is the senior editor of PJ Media. Now, PJ Media is a highly respected news outlet. It's a conservative news outlet that I rely on a lot. I was just telling Tyler, I was present at the founding of PJ Media back in the 90s, but the chief editor is Liz Sheldon. She's actually a good friend of mine. That's not why I commend her. She's a graduate of Harvard, brilliant girl, and PJ Media is a real powerhouse. Tyler himself is the senior editor. He has written articles that have been in the Christian Post, National Review, Washington Free Beacon, The Daily Signal, Colson Center's Breakpoint. He was also recently, you may have seen him on Tucker Carlson's Tonight. And so, but the other thing about Tyler is that he also is a Christian. And so I've asked him to join us because this whole issue with Josh had an impact on him. Tyler, thanks for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks, Sandy, for that wonderful introduction.
Well, Well, you're welcome. Tyler, I guess the part of your resume that's not there, because like me, you know, I do commentary and have for years worked for Fox. I don't lead with my Christian past. I never hide it, but that's not what I put on my resume. So let me ask you about that. What is your upbringing, your past, your Christian biography before we start talking about this?
When 8 days after I was born, I was baptized in the Episcopal Church, a very conservative Episcopal Church that has since become very liberal. But I first prayed the prayer to accept Jesus into my heart in 1994. I was in Switzerland, and I remember vividly because, it was Austria, but I remember vividly because the day after, a swarm of bees came by my ear, and I was a five-year-old, so I swatted at them, and I had my ear full of bee stings. And I like to say that was the first time I learned that following Jesus would not be an easy endeavor. But of course, that's more of a joke. My faith grew throughout high school when I read C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. Read isn't quite accurate. I devoured it. And I also was reading a lot of Nietzsche at the time. So very interesting philosophical bent. But I also picked up this book by this guy, Josh Harris, called I Kissed Dating Goodbye. I didn't get it right when it came out in 1997. I would have been 8 years old at the time. But I read it when I was a teenager and was very influenced by it. I thought that his extremely stringent rules about courting, very separate from dating, the way he interpreted it, and his rules about refraining from even kissing until your wedding day were a good thing, a wise thing, and something that could, guarantee a better romance when you did find, quote-unquote, the one. Slowly became disillusioned with that view, but we can get on to that there.
Yeah, we will. And so that helps a lot. That kind of lays the groundwork of your intersection with Josh. Now, let me introduce you to someone whose last name is very familiar to my audience. Jeremy Rios is a PhD student at St. Andrews, Scotland, and he's with us this morning, obviously by phone. I wish he were here in the room with me, but he's not. Jeremy was a pastor for 10 years in the Vancouver, British Columbia area, first a Vietnamese church and then a Chinese church, English-speaking, of course. And he, before that, got his master's degree at Regent, which is where Josh Harris went to school. Jeremy grew up during the time of Josh Harris's, he was a teenager, during the time when Josh wrote this book. And I honestly don't know the answer to the questions I'm going to ask him this morning. But first of all, Jeremy, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Jeremy, I don't ever remember us discussing Josh Harris. So do you tell me, did his book impact you?
Only tangentially. I never actually read the book, but it was everywhere, and everyone knew about it, and everyone knew kind of what was in it. And it made a lot of sense at the time. I mean, it was the late 90s, and everyone was feeling kind of like something was off with relationships and dating, and he offered a thesis that was compelling, that you should put it aside and wait, and that purity mattered. And so without having read it, the people I was around at that time, it just fit our narrative quite well. And so it was a popular book, even without having read its content.
Yeah. What was the whole story with him coming to Regent? What do you know about that part of it? Because that happened later in his life, right?
That's right. And actually, I think it's one of the most interesting parts about this story. He'd been with C.G. Mahaney at this Sovereign Grace Ministries, which had gone through a series of pretty intense scandals and has been in these scandals the last few years. Mahaney was quite close with Al Mohler, and Al Mohler has since publicly distanced himself from Mahaney. And there were accusations of abuse of power, and then there was a series of sexual accusations about leadership at Sovereign Grace. And Josh was the handpicked successor for C.J. Mahaney. He was supposed to take over from him, as on my understanding. And then in 2015, he announced publicly that he was going to leave the ministry and go get education, which in Sovereign Grace, he also said at the time that Christian higher education was something they'd previously dismissed, something they didn't think was valuable. So there was a real change seemingly going on at that time. And when he announced he was going to region, I was actually quite pleased. I thought, well, this could be a really great thing for someone who has been branded with this particular flavor of evangelicalism, which has maybe been a little wounded by some church in power, to kind of step away to a place like Vancouver and get recentered might have been a really good thing. And so I was, it was interesting to me that was what happened next.
So Josh, Jeremy, did he come to Region after you were there a student or before?
It was well after. He came in 2015.
Okay.
And I was,
okay.
He would have arrived while I was still in, well, I was still in Canada, but just before I left for, to move to Scotland.
Okay. Tyler, let's go back to your article because it's a really good one. By the way, we'll put it on our Facebook page, and you use the title, which is very clever, a good writer. Josh Harris kisses Christianity goodbye. You read his Instagram post, and let me just, I guess, let me read a little bit of this. He says, excuse me, not only does he announce his divorce from his wife, but he says, I have undergone a massive shift in regard to my faith in Jesus. The popular phrase for this is deconstruction. The biblical phrase is falling away. By all the measurements that I have found that I have for defining a Christian, I am not a Christian. Many people tell me that there is a different way to practice faith, and I want to remain open to this, but I'm not there. Excuse me, I'm not there now. That's what he wrote in his Instagram post. All right, so broadly, though, for you, the question is, help us to understand what impact this had on you, because I know it had, because of the article, I know it really impacted you. So in what way? Because I think you're going to speak for lots of people.
Yeah, no, so what I wrote was that this announcement hit me like a ton of bricks. Because this was a guy that I looked up to. I read his book, and as I explained in the article, Josh Harris didn't just suggest that, you know, he was presenting a new way of looking at relationships and dating. He said that he was the model for it, and that his relationship with his wife, which has now ended in divorce, was one of the reasons he could write this book and tell Christians how they should act romantically, how they should, you know, court as opposed to date, and how they should hold themselves back for marriage and everything. And so this kind of shattered me to hear that this guy not only, you know, no longer believes his teaching, which was, you know, really too far, but that he also has rejected the faith which we hold dear. And the thing that stood out to me was the popular phrase being deconstruction, because I've been very familiar. I'm a very intellectual person, and I have, you know, had doubts about faith, partially because I'm very into science, and there are so many you know, scientific writers who assume that evolution means Darwinism and who consistently push a narrative, a worldview that is in conflict with the idea of God being behind the universe. And I mean, we could get into evolution all day. But I think the main thing that I've always come back to is the historicity of Jesus' resurrection, how just the way that the gospel accounts are written, suggesting that their main sources that they're essentially quoting is that these people saw Jesus resurrected. If you want to know about it, go speak with them. This very journalistic style. And so when I read that Josh Harris had embraced deconstruction, I thought, okay, well, he's embraced a very secular, somewhat intellectual redefinition of the way that the Bible was put together that really doesn't square with the archaeological evidence that we have.
And Tyler, I'm going to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I'm going to just hold that thought. And when we come back, let's broaden that discussion with Jeremy. And so I'm assuming that that part of his statement is maybe the thing that shook you the most. I'm putting words in your mouth. You can confirm or deny it on the other side. And then, Jeremy, I want you to also respond to that whole notion of deconstruction. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
How hard is it for you to consider that you've gotten something wrong? I'm not talking about small areas. What about when the stakes are high? When what you've got wrong could affect your livelihood or your involvement in a community or even your own sense of identity? I wish that these questions were just theoretical, but for me, they're very real, very right now questions that I am wrestling with in a very public way.
That's interesting. That's Josh Harris speaking in late 2017. And to me, that's kind of a foreshadowing of what he actually wrote on Instagram when Pastor Josh Harris, the author of I Kiss Dating Goodbye and one of the chief adherents and participants in Sovereign Grace Ministries, which is, I think what they do is they embrace five-point Calvinism, which we'll get into Calvinism maybe in just a few minutes in some portion. But Josh has rejected his faith. He's divorcing his wife. He is apologizing to the LGBT community. And so it's pretty shocking. I've asked two young men, both Christians, who grew up during the time when Josh was writing and becoming Josh, about the impact on their lives. Tyler O'Neill is the senior editor of PJ Media. Jeremy Rios is a PhD student at St. Andrews University. Jeremy's written five different books. He was a pastor in Vancouver, and he has his Master's of Divinity from Regent, which is where Josh Harris attended. Tyler, before we took the break, I put words in your mouth and I said, I asked you what part of Josh's declaration on Instagram affected you the most. And you went right for, I think, the part where he talks about deconstructing, that he doesn't believe he's a Christian anymore. Is that the part that was most disturbing to you?
Well, I thought actually the most disturbing part was where he himself acknowledged. He says, by all the measurements that I have for defining a Christian, I am not a Christian. And this is a uniquely strong and clear statement that, you know, you don't usually see. You get a lot of Christian leaders who have slowly rejected the doctrines of Scripture, and they've been embracing the LGBT narrative of things. And in this case, Josh Harris did not beat around the bush. He said, I am no longer a Christian. And I thought the deconstruction was actually kind of a ploy or a way of explaining things that is not entirely clear. So I mentioned that I've had some struggles with faith in the past because of intellectual reasons. But I think the real thing that drives a person to reject a faith has more to do with the heart than with the head. And I found Harris's discussion of the LGBT movement particularly revealing, because he didn't just say, and I think Christians have been too harsh on LGBT people in the past. You know, homosexuality and gender confusion are not, you know, they're not these heinous things that are irredeemable the way some people seem to think that they are. They're just another sin that we, you know, the people have to deal with. The main problem is when people have pride in their sin, whatever that sin is. And Josh Harris seems to reject any sort of distinction there and says, you know, I'm sorry that I held to a biblical view of marriage as between one man and one woman. And when you're apologizing for that, you've gone down the deep end. And yes. I don't think, you know, We don't ever want to be, you know, hateful toward LGBT people, but at the same time, if you are a Christian, you should hold to the biblical definition of marriage, and I think that is probably one of the main reasons he rejected Christianity.
Yeah. All right, so, Jeremy, let me turn to you, and let me just interject something for both of your informations. This whole notion, you know, of Christians being harsh on the LGBT community, I don't doubt that some were, but I have to set the record straight from my experience as someone who has been in that movement, meaning not advocating, but standing against, because I was president of Concerned Women for America for a number of years, and our Culture and Family Institute was on the front lines of trying to stop gay marriage, and this is an issue I've debated ad nauseum most of my adult personal life as a Christian. And I would just say that because I know so many ex-gays and I've been involved in that, and involved with people who are working against that movement. They do not, they're Christians. They are not, they're very compassionate and yet very direct. They strike a great balance. And so I think sometimes we have to be careful to, I know this is like the standard line now, that Christians have been too hard, but I actually haven't experienced that. I think Christians maybe got too soft, but that's another issue for another day, Tyler. We'll come back to that. But Jeremy, I really want you to comment on his deconstructing. I mean, you heard what Josh said, so I just love to know what you think about the way Josh stated that and what that means.
There's a couple things to say, and before I talk about deconstruction, I just briefly want to say that what I find most disturbing about Josh's announcements is the way he's made them. There's something about kind of a slick marketing Instagram model of the presentation of this that really rubs me uncomfortably. And I think there's some really unholy association between marketing and Christianity that's bearing fruit in some of these things. Like, these big public figures are presented in such a way that when they fail or when they fall, they take a lot of people with them. And so maybe we can come back to that. I'll leave that aside. Deconstruction in itself, I mean, it all depends on what you're being deconstructed from. If a major health, wealth, prosperity gospel preacher was deconstructed from his prosperity theology, I would think that's a very good thing. It's a good thing for Christianity. It's a good thing for that pastor. It's a good thing for the pastor's followers. And so, but there's a danger as you begin to do that. So you could also be deconstructed from, say, King James only believing. This is the only translation that matters, and there's nothing else. The Greek Bible doesn't matter, and there's all sorts of weird beliefs that come. And you can get deconstructed from that. And the problem is that when you have these proxies for faith, if you put your faith in the wrong place, when that thing fails, often faith fails with it. And I think this is one of the things that Josh has been repenting of lately, is that a lot of people put their faith in a kind of vision of purity, expecting it to bear fruit in their marriage lives and in their sex lives. If I'm pure, I'll get gifts X from God. But the consequence is they set it up as a kind of false faith, and then life didn't turn out that way. And so they've been, all these people who follow purity culture have been being deconstructed from it for a long time, but many people have. And Josh has caught up with that, and I'm not surprised that he might go too far. It seems to me, based on the little reading I've done about his past and his history, that a big part of the deconstruction he's had is of some really wacky stuff in the Christian faith. So I'm not quite sure what he's left, but I'm not starting by the word deconstruction, because I see that in some circumstances is a really good thing. It just needs to be checked in certain ways.
But of course, in his case, he is saying, "I am not a Christian." He is definitely saying his deconstruction is that he no longer believes in Christ in
That's
the way.
Right. But we're not in a position at this moment to describe what is the Christianity that Josh Harris has left.
Yes. Yeah.
We don't know what that was, but if it's the C.J. Mahaney kind of like ultra conservative, really tight kind of power hungry vision of Christianity, then maybe there's something sour that he's leaving behind, and he's just left it all. By accident or by happenstance, or he's learned what he didn't believe. You know, linked to this, I see, you know, this Pew research about the rise of the religious nuns. I think this is part of this as well, is that people are learning more and more that they don't actually believe the things Christianity believes. The more they learn about Christianity, the more they're like, I actually don't think those things. And so we're getting a kind of more accurate picture of the state of certainly American Christianity.
Well, I think probably part of that is because the Christianity we've been taught in this last couple of decades is really easy. Christianity without cost, you know. And I think that when it starts to cost something, then that's when the people start rejecting it. They don't want to pay the price.
I think you're right, but I also think that this is where this gets really weird, because the Christianity that Harris came from was not easy. And it was hard, and it was legalist, as evidenced by stating it by. And so it was a stringent Christianity. So it wasn't, there's complexity here.
Yeah, I agree with that. Tyler, I thought it was really interesting. At least it struck me when I played that first clip this morning. And he's talking about writing his book, and he says that he tells God he wants to write a book that'll change the world. I thought that was pretty remarkable. That kind of gave us an insight. I don't know, did the Apostle Paul say that before he, I want to, you know, write a book that'll change the world. I kind of don't think that was his motivation.
This language of changing the world is a very recent development. It's a very prideful development, but it originally dates back to the early 20th century, where people had started to realize that the world is somewhat connected, especially Europe and America, and they thought it would be possible to write a book that influences people so much that it could be said to change the world. And then, of course, in the 1990s, we had this huge spring of all these books that said, oh, this will change the world, that will change the world, this will change. And it's like the phrase change the world has come to mean almost nothing. So when he said change the world, I mean, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think he was just referring to, I want to make a big splash. I want people to read my words. But at the same time, I think there is a worldly dimension, because when you look at I Kiss Dating Goodbye, it isn't focused on, the message isn't, this is the way to honor God, and therefore you should have this very stringent approach to sexuality. The message is, the message was slightly based on that, but it was almost more, if you want a close relationship with your spouse and you want to have sex frequently, you want to have a really happy marriage, then you need to hold yourself back from everything during dating and during courtship, and you need to have this very stringent view. And that's a prosperity gospel message, essentially. It's if God will reward you for your good work, and it has the very disgusting corollary that if you get sick, or if you don't recover, if you become poor, that means your faith was lacking. So if you know, as according to the prosperity gospel, your faith will bring you prosperity. And that's really not what Jesus or Paul ever teach in the New Testament. It is true that if you follow the precepts of the Christian faith and live a moral life, then you probably will have some blessing. But Jesus promises almost the opposite. He says, if you follow me, you will be persecuted. And I think Josh Harris had this, as you said, a very legalistic approach that also was worldly. So to see him going from being focused on, hey, how can I get people to have a wonderful sex life in marriage in a godly way, to how can I celebrate people's wonderful sex life, in outside of the traditional definition of marriage, and whether or not it's godly, I think there's a connection. I think he's not preaching the same message, obviously, but his goal is roughly the same.
Yes. Jeremy, because you just wrote a book on marriage called Naked and Unashamed, by the way, we'll link that on our Facebook also. I know you've given a lot of thought to God's, I know you gave thought before you wrote the book, but to God's design for men and women, their sexuality, dating, and all of that. So as you look to Josh's writings, we only have about 3 minutes here, as you look to his thesis in his, I guess, Dating Goodbye, what's right and what's wrong? Can you kind of lay that out?
I mean, in the broadest sense, what's right is that purity does matter, and our bodies do matter. I mean, we're told in the scriptures that our body is a temple of the Holy Spirit, so that what I do with my body, I've done with God's Spirit towards other people, and how I treat other people's bodies matters hugely. I mean, this is all the way back to early Genesis, that what I do to someone else, I've done to the image of God. So this stuff is deeply rooted in our Christian tradition, so there's no question about those things. But I think that what's the key thing missing, I think Josh himself identifies this. He says the book lacks grace, and I think that seems right to me, that he wrote a book from within a legalist framework that took a legalist account of dating. And in the consequence of that is that you lose, what about the grace for people who screw up? And what about grace for people who whose marriages don't turn out just right? And what about grace for misfits? And what about grace for legalists who have to recover from this stuff as well? And so I think that's probably its biggest shortcoming, is that it missed out on grace. And then I think Tyler's Tyler's comment about this being a kind of prosperity is perceptive. There's a huge theological flaw in presenting your purity as a kind of bargaining chip to God for receiving a happy and sex-filled marriage. That's just not how that works. I mean, your purity is a portion of yourself, but there's so much more to people than our sexuality. And in fact, I think this is one of the key moments of grace that's missing in the Christian LGBTQ discussion, which is that how much of the person is filled by sexuality and how much of the person exceeds it. Sometimes when you speak to persons who are LGBTQ, you get the feeling that their entire life is their sexuality. And we want a grace for persons that are more than that. The flip side is that sometimes with people like who read Harris's book, is they treated their heterosexuality like it was their whole personality. You get this business of single people being less than married, and of marriage being a kind of exalted state because sex is permitted. It's just an idol of sex, and in both cases it's wrong.
Very interesting, you guys, both of you. Really fascinating concepts. I wish I had time to respond, but I don't. We have to take a break. By the way, we'll put Tyler's new article, Josh Harris Kisses Christianity Goodbye, the link to that, and Jeremy's book, Naked and Unashamed, a book on marriage, on our Facebook page. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I started out actually in high school. I was a born-again Christian. I accepted Christ as my Lord and Savior, as we used to say, and I became very committed as an evangelical Christian, and I went off to Moody Bible Institute for college, which is a fundamentalist Bible college. After that, I went to Wheaton College, which is a liberal arts college. It's Billy Graham's alma mater. It's an evangelical school. So I had very solid evangelical Christian commitments. And eventually, I got a seminary degree, and I was a pastor of a Baptist church for a year. But gradually, for a large number of reasons, I started to question some of the assumptions that I had about the faith. For a long time, I thought that the Bible was inspired and inerrant, that there were no mistakes in the Bible. But as I engaged in historical research on the Bible, as I was getting my PhD in New Testament studies at Princeton Theological Seminary, I started finding mistakes in the Bible. And this cut away at my assumptions that the Bible was inerrant. And then I started questioning other parts of my faith. Is Jesus really divine? Is there really a Trinity? It was difficult. I mean, if you're raised in a Christian tradition, this is forms the very heart and soul of who you are. And leaving it means leaving friends. It means alienating family. It means losing out on all sorts of social networks that you have and all sorts of beliefs that you've held dear. And so it's very difficult and traumatic emotionally. But my view at the time was that I was in a search for what is true. And I came to believe it simply isn't true that the Bible's without error. And the idea that Jesus is God is an idea that was developed historically over time among Christians. It wasn't something that was original to Christianity. It's a later historical development. So
all right,
to the
that's
a,
you
of
get the
Trinity.
Gist of it. I'm going to interrupt because it's a long clip. That's Bart Ehrman. And you heard Bart tell his past. He went to Moody Bible Institute and Wheaton College, which is where Jeremy graduated from for his undergrad. We're talking about the Josh Harris, pastor, author of Dating Goodbye, who had tremendous impact on the youth culture, Christian youth culture, in the 90s and in the 2000s. And so I've asked Tyler O'Neill and my son Jeremy Rios, who are both strong Christian men who are in there working their way through their own careers. Tyler, a senior editor at PJ Media, and Jeremy, a PhD student at St. Andrews, working to be a professor or a pastor or both. And so they were growing up at the time that Josh was writing this book. Jeremy, let me turn to you first. One thing that I was thinking, you know, when Josh Harris now is making this public decision and this great picture on Instagram of him gazing at the water and the trees, and he's so happy, and Bart Ehrman says what he says, it occurs to me that people who go that way are celebrated in this culture. It's a lot easier to come out of Christianity than it is to actually turn to Jesus. That's just one observation I wanted to make. But what are your thoughts about someone publicly who's been in ministry, leaving the faith and its effects on not only Christians, but the general population. And when you have conversations with people, how do you get around these stumbling blocks of leaders, in Christian leaders, leaving the faith?
Well, I mean, speaking as a pastor, it grieves me because I see how it hurts a lot of people's faith. And, you know, James tells us that not many should presume to be teachers because they'll be judged more harshly. So that whenever anyone like me stands up with a microphone and a Bible, we take our lives in our own hands in some really key ways. So I think it's grievous because the threat is real in terms of what this means for him and what it means for us. And so rather than making a judgment about Josh and what this means for Josh, I think I have to just take a look in the mirror and say, wow, I've got to really keep straight so that I don't screw up the faith of my people. And that seems to me to be one of the key responses for this. The other thing is that I think it's helpful to try and see, if possible, see the good. I think it seems like Josh is motivated by compassion. He's hearing about the people who've been hurt, and he's trying to listen to them and be compassionate, and he's trying to be honest about these things. And so I think there's something praiseworthy in that compassion, that honesty. At the same time, there's also a hardness and a dishonesty. He's being hard to his own kids, and he's being dishonest to his marriage covenant. So there's a lie wrapped up in the compassion as well, right? Like, it's not just praiseworthy compassion. It's also a kind of hateful compassion if it makes you leave your commitments. There's something really wrong with that.
Yeah.
So I want to see the good, but I also want to criticize in the right way.
Tyler, same question for you in general, just your response to that about the effect, because like you are working in a secular culture more than Jared. Well, that's debate. There's some debate there, but you are directly moving among people who don't profess Jesus the way you and I and Jeremy do. And so how does this impact your conversations with them?
I think it opens the door to actually talk about what Christianity is and what it isn't. And I think the way he mentions deconstruction, and I love that Bart Ehrman clip you played, because I think that's exactly the wrong understanding of Scripture and church history. We have this worldly idea that, oh, the idea that Jesus was God is a late invention that Christians came up with, or, oh, the Gospels or the New Testament wasn't compiled until the Council of Nicaea, and we have all these texts that should be in the Bible but aren't. It's like all of those are really bad misinterpretations of history. They're actually ignorant when you actually look at how the Bible came about. It wasn't a top-down thing. It was a bottom-up movement, and almost all of the churches had agreed on the vast majority of the New Testament text. There were a few questions they had about Hebrews and Revelation, and then if you also look at, I mean, right there in the Gospel of John, how much more clear could Jesus be in saying that he is God? There are sections over and over and over again. If anybody who understands the slightest thing of the Old Testament and what the Jews had been reading and knowing for centuries looks at the Gospel of John or the Gospel of Matthew, you can't ignore it. It's just obvious that Jesus is saying he's God. And that's why the people try to stone him over and over and over again. But I think this presents an opportunity. And I really appreciated what you said earlier, that we have the opportunity to talk about grace here. And the point, I think this I Kiss Waving Goodbye is a very legalistic book. It does, you know, it does teach the kind of fidelity and singleness that Jesus upheld to some degree, but not as a way of trying to get a better sex life in marriage, but as a way of honoring God and following his commands and doing things in the right way that, as you said, honors the temple of our body.
You know, let me just say to both of you, as someone who's been in ministry, well, of a sort, I've done public policy, but I consider that my ministry. for years, there are two things I've seen in people's lives to have them turn against Jesus and leave their faith. And one of them is these false promises of, I prayed for someone to live or be healed or survive, or I prayed that my mortgage would be paid, or I'd pay, and, you know, God didn't do it, and there was devastation, and therefore I'm walking away. And the second thing is immorality, personal immorality. I've seen this over and over again. In fact, I had a great conversation with Paul Johnson, who was a professor of law and also of, I believe, philosophy at USC, at Berkeley, a number of years ago. He wrote Darwin on Trial. Actually, Tyler, you would love his stuff. But Paul was one of the founders of Discovery Institute, which was a powerhouse on the issue of intelligent design. But Paul and I were talking about just our observation in talking to atheists, that often at the deep core of their atheism was an unwillingness to give up some sexual proclivity. You fill in the blank. And because maybe they were honest intellectually, they would rather be honest and choose and say there is no God, therefore there are no boundaries, than to pretend that there was a God and then live the way they wanted. I've seen that happen repeatedly, and that might be certainly makes sense with Josh in both of those cases. But Jeremy, I want to ask you a little different twist here. Because, and this is really curveball, I think, but I think you can handle this. I know you can. Josh, of course, was one of the key leaders in Sovereign Grace Ministries, which, as I understand it, embraces five-point Calvinism. Now, without having to go into great explanation, let's just say that that is the ultimate embrace of that man doesn't really have much to do, that God is kind of controlling everything. That's the extreme five-point Calvinism. And so I'm wondering if you think that his embrace of Calvinism might at any point have an effect on his decision that he's no longer a Christian.
Well, I mean, if he really embraces Calvinism, then he can't either claim to be a Christian or not be a Christian. It's either he's elect or not. He doesn't have a choice in it. So it wouldn't be an act of the will unless he looks at his life from within Calvinism and discerns that, oh, I don't show any of the fruits of being saved. Therefore, by all accounts, maybe that's what he means by his declaration that I, therefore, am not a Christian because I don't show any of these things that make me one. I don't know. I mean, there are as many Calvinisms as there are grains of sand, probably. So it's more the unique kind of DNA and structure of Sovereign Grace Ministries to me would be far more important than their doctrinal specifics. Because you can be power-hungry and controlling and be an Arminian fundamentalist, and you can be power-hungry and controlling and be five-point Calvinist, and you can be power-hungry and controlling and be Catholic. Power hungry and control is not the doctrinal holdover of any one group. So I'd want to look at the character of the ministry more than I want to look at its specific doctrines, although they must interrelate in some ways.
So what do you guys think is next? Josh there was an article in PJ Media, Josh, by one of your fellow writers. She did a great, Paula Bolliard, who I don't actually know, but she wrote a great article about this. And she's predicting that we're going to see a lot more of this because it's going to be more and more difficult. Sounds like she heard me speak, but it's going to be, I'm kidding. It's going to become more and more difficult to adhere to the Christian principles, to really live your faith. It's going to cost a lot. And she's predicting that lots of people are going to be walking away and saying goodbye. I just love to know your thoughts about that.
Yeah, well, I think to some degree, she's right. We have seen this more honest identification of people saying that they are none, that they don't fit with any religion. And I think a lot of nominal Christians are moving in that direction. But I also think this is a good development for the church to some degree, because more and more of the Christians who will remain are those who know what they believe and why they believe it, and who are willing to take certain cultural hits in order to uphold their faith.
So the separation of the chaff from the wheat. And, you know, Bart written down in front of me here, Tyler, as you look around to young Christians that you know who are in your age bracket, what are you seeing? Are you seeing them grow stronger in their faith? Are you encouraged, or are you feeling like the lone man standing? What's it like?
Yeah, it's so I go to a very strong, biblically Orthodox church, the Falls Church Anglican here in the Washington, D.C. area. And I
know that
it has
church.
A very vibrant.
I do know that church very well.
It has a very vibrant youth ministry, and I have a lot of friends who are strong believers and sometimes stronger than I am. And it's encouraging to see that segment. But I do know, just being in D.C., you can't escape the fact that there are so many much more secular people.
And a lot of nuns.
Especially young people.
Yeah, we're not saying that's N-O-N-E-S. Jeremy, you have 30 seconds, 45 at the most. Your generation, are you encouraged? Are you concerned?
When I look to people younger than me, I'm encouraged because I see them with real faith and faithfulness. When I look to my own generation, I'm not as encouraged. I think we are the fallout of a poorly educated Christianity. And maybe the last thing I want to say is just that, you know, for certain people, they might look at Josh and think he got education and fell away. And I think that's not right. There's a false division between heart and head. And that our Christian faith of the future needs both. We need rich hearts and we need heads that are full of good knowledge. And we can't have one at the expense of the other and expect Christianity to thrive.
Excellent. All right, Bart, Tyler and Jeremy Rios, thank you so much. I'm encouraged.